Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Betty Peralta is an adult-child interaction specialist working with parents, teachers, and therapists to give children relationships that set them up for their best lives. She started out her career as a special education teacher who wanted more for her students than the one-size-fits-all ways of learning. As a therapist working mainly in homes and classrooms, Betty helps adults understand children better. She uses the Neuro-Relational Framework, NRF, to target areas of development that could use enhancement, particularly the ability to self-regulate, make friends, take on responsibility, and learn. Betty recently led a training on social-emotional learning for educators and staff at South Shore Pre-K through 8 in South Seattle, a close partner of League of Education Voters. Her website is altavenues.com. Betty, thank you so much for joining me. What is social-emotional learning, or SEL?
You can think of it in three parts. So how a person handles their emotions would be one part, how they interact with others, and how they see themselves and treat themselves. It fits in, when you're thinking about neuroscience, it fits in the brain's networks as third up on the rung. So the first rung is your body functioning. Your second rung is your sensory functioning, your sensory network. And then you've got your social emotional network. And then you've got your executive function at the top.
So in other words, you can't think in terms of problem solving so much if you aren't emotionally regulated first.
That's right. And if you have a student with lots of sensory challenges, you can't work on the social emotional stuff until you handle the sensory stuff.
So how do you know what a student is dealing with if you were to see somebody who is apparently dysregulated when they're in a classroom? Are they dealing with a sensory issue? Are they dealing with an emotional issue? Or is there something else going on?
You got to know the student. It's always individual. And it tends to be helpful when you know how they react, for example, to sensory information, or how long it's been since they've eaten. So at that body level, if they're hungry, you're not going to be teaching them social emotional learning. You're going to be feeding them. And then you can teach them social emotional learning once their stomachs are full. So that body level is primary. And then if you have a child who has sensory processing issues, you know they've got an autism diagnosis or have tendencies of autism, then you just know that you need to look first at the sensory, and then you can start thinking about their social emotional. They just need to be comfortable at those two levels first before they can go to social emotional. And then, as you said, if they are struggling academically with at that executive level, check those bottom levels before you try to do any interventions that are at that executive level, like breaking things apart and providing scaffolding. Kids need that bottom-up approach where you're looking body, sensory, social, emotional, and then executive last.
And is that true for a student of any age?
Any age, any human being of any age, and dogs, cats, rats, anybody, anything that you want to learn, it's true of all of us.
So would that change the way that we do a school day, for example? Should we do a check-in with every student to see where they're at, to not necessarily jump right into, you know, math class, for example, and instead have some sort of buildup to that?
I would recommend jumping into math class because we don't want to incorporate routines that aren't necessary. So I would say jump into math class. And as soon as you see a stress response from a student, that's when we respond with compassion and meeting needs. So it's okay to stress out kids because you've jumped in. Just respond appropriately.
In terms of the benefits of teaching social emotional learning, what do you see? What could a teacher in a classroom, or what could a school building or even a school district learn from embracing these concepts?
that their lives become a lot easier with kids. They learn that they can actually enjoy their jobs 10 times more when they are no longer forcing themselves to follow policies that don't work for anybody. Consequences for behaviors are not fun for anyone. They make everybody stressed out. They make teachers not like themselves. They're not comfortable with it either. Once you focus on relationship and focus on student needs, then you can kind of relax and enjoy teaching and enjoy working with kids. It's very rewarding.
That's huge. And it sounds like there needs to be a mindset shift in order to look at interactions with students that way. What do you think the friction is? What are the barriers to changing that mindset?
The pressure that teachers are under to follow a curriculum and get everything done in the right amount of time. And so when a student derails that, it's very stressful for a teacher. They feel the pressure of policymakers, of principals, of the district. They feel that pressure and then they pass it on to kids. When, for example, at South Shore, teachers are given permission to put that second to students' well-being. It's revolutionary. It seems silly that it should be, but to have permission to stop everything, stop your teaching and attend to the emotional needs or sensory needs of a child or body needs of a child and have your curriculum be put on hold for that helps everyone because it gives all kids this in the room, this sense that this is a safe place for all of us. We're all okay here. That makes learning way more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. What can that look like? In other words, like if we were to role play here and I'm the student and you're the teacher, for example, I'm bouncing up and down in my chair and I'm elbowing my seatmate, in this case, probably 3 feet away since you know we're wearing masks and so on. Mm-hmm. What would you as a teacher do like while you're in the middle of trying to say teach a math lesson?
I would stop and check on that student's needs. So I would wonder with that child, did you get enough time to run around at recess? Do you need some time right now to run around somewhere? There's a school that has a program where when that's happening in a classroom, the child can go with a staff member to the gym and run around the gym, play basketball, and then come back and sort of get their willies out. Another thing that some classrooms do is have yoga balls, those exercise balls for kids who just can't sit still. And it gives them an opportunity to have their body focusing on balancing and doing other things so that they can then concentrate. So I would just see what are those needs that that student has that makes it hard for them to sit still and focus.
And what if it's an older student who might be in middle school or high school that's just sort of checked out, that's not tracking what's happening in the classroom? Because clearly
Absolutely
something's going the on there.
Thing. You talk with that student. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you stop everything and talk with that student. It's something you just notice. And at another time, sit down with that student and say, so I was noticing that it's hard for you to concentrate. I wonder if we could think together about some things that would make that easier for you. Often what comes out is, well, this is what's going on at home. And so that student would then be referred to a counselor who could work with the whole family.
Yeah, I can see why that would be helpful for sure. Now, you mentioned at the beginning, part of social emotional learning is learning how to get along with others. How does that come into play? Is there a certain curriculum that deals with that aspect of social emotional learning, or is it something that can be embedded into everything else?
It's absolutely embedded because what's true about our brains is that they're already wired to come into this world as social beings. So they don't really have to learn that much. What they need is opportunities to regulate and reflect. This comes in when kids are arguing. he stole my pencil and that's why I hit him. Big fight. The social emotional learning is for a teacher or any adult to come into that interaction and say, I see what you're saying and I see what you're saying. And so that everybody feels heard. And then once they feel heard, they feel calm. Mm. This isn't necessarily true immediately because they may not trust that they're going to be heard. They may be dysregulated because they expect a consequence or some shame. And so it takes a little while for some students to be able to regulate just from being heard. Once they trust that they've been heard and they're not being blamed, then they can calm down. And then once they have been heard and they're feeling calmer, they can start reflecting on how they want to solve the problem. And initially, what you see is kids will start solving the problems by making the benefit theirs. So they'll say, well, it's my pencil, so I should have it. And the other student will say, no, it's my pencil and I should have it. Initially, they may still disagree, but you give them time. You say, oh, so you should have it and you should have it. And now what do you want to do? Kids will begin to navigate that and figure out how they can solve this problem for mutual benefit. And that's how they grow.
Now, how widespread is social emotional learning in Washington State? Do you see that most districts are at least open to discussing it? Or is there still a lot more awareness and a lot more implementation of it that needs to happen?
There's still a lot more awareness and implementation that needs to happen. And at the same time, I think everybody wants to learn about it. When I go into schools or now on Zoom, I don't get any pushback on anything that I teach about this. Everybody is really keen to learn how to teach social emotional learning, but it's not very widespread. Everybody's just putting out fires in schools. I shouldn't say everyone, because there are definitely schools that are working on this. But with those pressures of let's test and make sure kids are meeting standards, it just makes it harder for teachers to settle down, because the first thing that has to happen is that you have to slow down the interactions, and they're afraid to slow down.
Yeah, it sounds like social emotional learning is equally as important for educators and building staff as well as for students. It seems like everybody needs to be on board with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it takes slowing down the curriculum and allowing for those teachable moments to take over.
Especially now, I would think that with the impacts of COVID-19 and just the trauma, I guess, that students and staff and parents have all been dealing with, you know, even now, because everyone's masked up and distant or having to be sent home on quarantine if there have been cases in buildings, the impact of COVID on education right now is got to be massive. And so I would think that social emotional learning is more important now than ever.
Definitely. It's more important now than ever. When children have been traumatized, their social emotional brain networks take a big hit, and their sensory networks also take a big hit. Both of those things really need attention in schools.
How could our state support social emotional learning? I mean, we've got 295 school districts. Is there something the state could do?
Yes, we have a huge lack of training for teachers right now. Teachers want to be trained, but they're not putting money into that. And there needs to be money put into that. Teachers want to learn another way besides taking away recess. They just don't have anyone giving them other options. That's what they can do, is provide the training of promising practices. Fortunately, the state has opened up their requirements. Before, only evidence-based practices were allowed to be taught. And now they've opened it up to promising practices, because evidence-based practices are not trauma-informed, but promising practices are. Hmm. like the neurorelational framework, for example. We just haven't had enough time to do the research. It takes years to become an evidence-based practice. So fortunately, they've done that much, and now they just need to provide the training to teachers to get those practices into classrooms.
Do you have a moment just to say what the neurorelational framework is? Because Sure. It sounds really cool.
The neurorelational framework responds to children's needs at four brain network levels. The bottom level is the regulatory system that has to do with bodily functions like the stress response system, hunger, sleep. That's our priority. And once we know a child has enough food, sleep, and is free of pain and other stressors, then we move up to assessing and addressing this sensory system. And at this system, a child requires us to moderate how much sensory information they're getting. They need to be stimulated, but they also need breaks from stimulation. And downtime is so underrated in school and in society in general. But for optimal learning, we know that kids need brain breaks. And that's one example of the sensory needs that children can have. The next network up is the relevance system of the nervous system. And this system has to do with emotions, meaning, relationships. And meeting learning needs at this level means that we need to make sure that children have a sense of belonging. They need to feel cared about, and they also need to be reflected in the curriculum. That means that the curriculum needs to reflect their interests and include role models who look like them and share their culture and identities and put those in a positive light.
Yeah.
And the last most sophisticated network is the executive network. This is what adults tend to focus on because it's what children can do. It's what children show us. It's part of the iceberg we can see, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. In order for this network to flourish, the less sophisticated networks that hold up the executive network, like the regulatory, sensory, and the relevance networks, those need to be attended to first. Meeting needs at the executive level include teaching to children's learning styles and using their strengths as a jumping off point to learning. A really great way to do that is project-based learning. Project-based learning is an effective, research-validated way of meeting children's needs at the executive level, although it's rare to see it happening in schools. We seem to be insisting on the factory model because it's thought to be easier for educators. It really isn't, though, because it's really the root of our problems with students. Project-based learning takes a lot of thought and planning ahead of time, but then once you get it set up, it pretty much runs itself. All that's left to do is scaffolding and helping kids meet deadlines and things like that. And the kids really do most of the work. But that's basically the neurorelational framework, is really looking at each of those networks, those four networks, and prioritizing the less sophisticated ones so that the more sophisticated ones can thrive. The main tenet of the neurorelational framework is that what we want is a safety, challenge, threat model. Normally, a lot of the trauma-informed practices talk about safety and threat and getting kids out of threat and into safety. But actually, what we need is a model that looks for a threat, identifies when a child is in threat, gets them to safety, and then challenges them to learn, challenges them to handle difficult situations. And then when they fall into threat because they've been challenged, we get them back to safety again before we challenge them again. So that they don't just get away with everything, so that they don't just run roughshod around the schools because, oh, that was trauma and we don't want to re-traumatize them. So we're going to let them do whatever they want to do. There's no challenge in them. There's no growth in that. We're not doing them any favors. They're not learning how to be in society. We watch for threat. We implement interventions that help them feel safe through the body, sensory, social, emotional, executive interventions, and then we challenge them.
Yeah, that sounds great. If I'm a parent and I'm hearing you describe this, and I realize that my student doesn't have that at their school, or it's not something that's in my district as a parent, how would I advocate for something like this?
Challenge the schools on their approaches to behavior. When your child is getting a consequence for their behavior over and over and over again, ask, how is this furthering their social emotional learning? Is this consequence doing anything to help my child grow? And if the answer is no, then that consequence is inappropriate. And think with school personnel on what would be appropriate. What's appropriate is finding ways to help that child feel safe before the challenges come. And the challenges absolutely need to come.
So I would work primarily on a building level first. In other words, start with my teacher, if I were a parent, my student's teacher, and then maybe kick it up to the principal after that. And then if that doesn't work, then should I go to a school board meeting or meet with a district superintendent at that point?
When you come in for a meeting because your child has had consequence after consequence, often there's a team meeting. I would ask for one of those. Talk about how can you all make my child feel safe in this building? What can you do so that my child feels safe as a priority over everything else that you have a problem with my child? All of those things are important, but the safety is number one. If you want him to behave differently or her to behave differently, then I need you to figure out how to help them feel safe. Everything you do in that meeting is, these are the interventions that are going to help my child feel safe. I'm fine with you challenging him with your expectations after he feels safe.
And then if that doesn't work, is that when you kick it up?
I would talk to as many people in the school as possible. So I would start with principal and teacher. And the reason for that is often when something happens in the classroom, the kid gets kicked out and goes to a vice principal or a principal. All of those levels need to be included in that plan. So I wouldn't just stop with the teacher, especially because if the teacher is doing something as a result of the meeting that is outside of the norm, then they may get criticism from a principal or may fear criticism from a principal. So in order for the teacher to feel supported in doing these interventions, there needs to be the teacher's supervisors there. So yeah, I would never just do it teacher only. I would try and get everybody.
Right. And if by meeting with the principal or vice principal and still nothing changes, is that when you go to the district and maybe ask for a meeting with the superintendent or go to a school board meeting?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I suppose so. I mean, I haven't had a lot of success with bringing those people in myself, but that's just me.
Yeah.
I think that when you can't get them on board, then it's time to start looking at other options for education, if possible.
Mm. Well, let's talk about your own educational journey. What worked and what didn't work so well in your own experience with education?
Well, what didn't work for me was sitting in classrooms, listening to lectures, and having all of the hands-on and wonderful activities happen without, you know, I often didn't understand what was happening when I was doing really cool things because I couldn't understand lectures. I couldn't listen. I wasn't able to attend to lectures as a kid.
Was that because of sensory or other things going on?
Yeah. I mean, I have a history of trauma as a child, of complex trauma. Mm. And so due to that, my brain, my executive function wasn't available to sit there and listen. So what was happening in my brain was sort of stuck at the social emotional level where I was always looking around and seeing, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? Does that teacher like me? Does that friend like me? That's what my brain was busy with. So I didn't have the bandwidth for just listening to a teacher talk. And that's a lot of our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get supports at different points during your educational journey that did work?
I would say yes and no. I got blamed for not understanding, and I got frustrated teachers. But over time, I did start to be able to focus, because as you get older, like in high school, you're able to start taking classes that are of interest, and having high interest content makes a very big difference. But also, as I grew and as kids grow, we have more schema. We have more information to hang new ideas onto. And so as we grow, it becomes easier to learn.
So I'm going to ask you a big picture question. If you were in charge of our educational system in Washington State and there were no budget constraints, what would you change?
Oh, how lovely. I would just get every teacher and every administrator trained up on the safety challenge threat model and armed with interventions at all of the brain networks.
That sounds fabulous. Betty Peralta is an adult child interaction specialist working with parents, teachers, and therapists to give children relationships that set them up for their best lives. Her website is altavenues.com. Betty, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to learn more about League of Education Voters or support our work, please visit our website, educationvoters.org.